Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is an interview with Mr. Wang Yang Lui on April 25th, 1982, at San Luis Obispo by Sue Ellen Chan. This is tape 5. Yeah, we were talking about that your father owned some property in town, mm-hmm. and do you know how he acquired this property?
Well, he bought the area where the Alu store is and all the way up Palm Street towards uh-huh. the northeast uh-huh. Side of, towards the city hall and the courthouse. He acquired that before the law, mm-hmm. restriction law was out, and so that was his own property.
Uh-huh. He always purchased under his own name, or he doesn't
on
have to
his
use
own name, no.
The children's no. name. Was he ever become a American citizen?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. Didn't take out citizenship paper.
Uh-huh.
And so I suppose if he did, restrictions against the Orientals were so great, uh-huh. then I doubt if they'll ever, he would ever have a chance to become American citizens, although he liked to very much because he was so imbued with the customs and everything around here in this country, mm-hmm. that I wouldn't doubt that he would sure like to, but
he never did that.
The sentiment against the Chinese at that time
was great.
Was great, and then the law came out,
uh-huh.
and which made it worse.
Uh-huh. I see.
And so the situation was worse. However, he was highly respected. I think I mentioned that before, that he was highly respected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he
was highly respected, like in all the families, mm-hmm. Your brothers and in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you and your brother are active in some of the American organizations. Did your father actually participate in any American social organizations or political organizations, although of course he was not a citizen.
I don't believe that he has really actively engaged in social affairs around the town. You know, they have social affairs and they come up and talked with my father in a very friendly way.
Uh-huh.
However, I don't remember of ever he was invited into any Caucasian social gathering.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
I see,
society,
I see.
Really adapted into the society.
Mm-hmm.
Has never been molested or because he was Chinese or try to run him out of town like some other places like down Royal Grande where they scared him out of town. The Chinese wanted to settle there or run a laundry or something like that down there. But when they heard about the Chinese wanted to open up a laundry down in Royal Grande, which is 15 miles away from
mm-hmm.
San Luis,
mm-hmm.
I heard stories that they frightened them.
Uh-huh.
That is, they didn't do them any harm,
uh-huh.
actually harm the Chinese, but they they threatened them, you know, and so they, the Chinese got scared and moved away from Rio Grande area.
I see.
So that's the reason why there isn't any Chinese down in Rio Grande.
Ah, I see. Hmm.
But in town here, the only one instance, which is only the kids' prank, you know, there, there was a fella in town here who was, he wasn't retired. He would accept work if he could get it. But he wasn't capable of doing anything great, you know, like cooking, cooking job or ranch hand. He wasn't capable of doing that. And he always sits around in Chinatown in front of the Chinese places there. People in Chinatown would help him out, you know, with the food. So that's how he lived, and my dad would give him a place to stay without any rent. So that's the reason why he was in existence around in San Luis Chinatown. But he, the kids around in the area would tease him, you know, and because he was just sitting there doing nothing, and he would chase after him, you know, chase after him and pick up a rock and throw at him, throw at the kids, you know, because they this Chinese would always trying to chase after the pranksters, would say something in Chinese to him, and always end up with a phrase like "wele wele," "waasini wele," "ele," or you know something like that. Well, that ending, you know, "ele," "waalini," and "aalini." Well, and then these pranksters would pick up the phrase "ele ele," and so they call him "wele wele," and then he'd get mad. You know, Chinese would get mad and chase him down half a block down the street and throw rocks at him. And throw, you know.
I see.
So that's the only you know, they really didn't do them
any harm.
They're just teasing him.
Right.
That's the only, you know, between the Caucasian and the Chinese, that's the only, what do you call them?
Not really discrimination. No discrimination.
It's not discrimination.
Right.
It's just fun. It's a fun deal. But it's no threatening.
No harm.
No harm done
to
the Chinese.
I see. The other question I have is that you start, you decide to leave the farm and work in Andrew Hotel, as you mentioned this morning. And who took over your job in the farm after you left?
There were so many people around. You mean the...
Yeah, you were helping your father in that farm, seed farm.
I was a timekeeper, you know.
So who took over that job?
Well, he turned it over to one of the foremen, a Chinese foreman on the ranch who would take care of the timetable and the listing of the laborers, the time. And
Did any of your brother get involved in farm work?
No, they didn't like farming. None of them were really wrapped up in the farm.
But they did help here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So you were the only one work in the farm
actually, I work on a farm. A couple of my brothers, you know, one is Walter and George. they go down to the farm and help out a little bit, maybe a day or two or something, but not actually take part as being a farmer.
Being farmer.
You know.
Did they sort of go down there, you know, during the school break?
Yes,
like the summer times,
like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's about all. Uh-huh. Really.
Can you describe, you know, what kind of job you do in the farm besides keeping books and
oh,
the
my
time?
Work.
Yeah.
What I was doing.
Like early in the morning,
oh,
you know, you got up
always,
early.
Always, there's so much things to do. Anything that is required on a farm, you know, like getting up 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning to feed the stock,
uh-huh.
Feed the horses, and then we go back and get our breakfast. After breakfast, we go and hitch up the horses and do regular farm work, whether hitch them to the plow,
mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
To turn up the land, or harrowing, breaking up the ground and planting or seed planting. And I was, I don't mean to brag or anything like that, but they say that I plant beans or any kind of a crop in such a long way because the farms are so big, you know, 1,500 acres in one spot. Sometime and I would plant the rows of a crop so straight
uh-huh.
So straight, and I was bragging about the being how straight it is that I can plant.
You have a the engineer's mind.
Perhaps that's why I was stuck to the engineer job uh-huh. When I left the farm, you know.
And do you use any machinery to plant these?
Mm-hmm. I was separator tender, the one we go out and thresh,
mm-hmm.
Thresh grain, thresh the seeds, or barley or wheat or whatever crop we grow, you know, flower seeds or vegetable seeds. We used to have quite a large machine, a thresher,
mm-hmm.
That threshes, you know, when we do the harvesting, and I was a what they call a separator tender.
Uh-huh.
I was sort of a foreman around the machine, and anything breaks down, it's up to me to fix it.
Fix
and,
them.
And if there's anything goes wrong, if the too much. Material goes out with its chaff
uh-huh.
When it's thrown out in that's waste, you see.
Uh-huh.
You're losing money that way when it, you know, if we were supposing we were thrashing beans,
uh-huh.
Well, if the too many old beans goes out with the thrash, you know,
uh-huh.
the tail end,
uh-huh.
Why we're losing money, so we have to adjust the machines and so they'll work
keep it,
properly.
I see.
And if it's too much thrash goes into the bean, that's not so good. That's dirty bean.
Uh-huh.
You're not getting a clean
the
result.
Crops, yeah, right. So like besides the seeds, do you actually plant the regular crops?
Oh yes, uh-huh. Yeah, not,
and a cell
not a vegetable, unless it's the farm planted for that purpose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have vegetable farms and we have seed farms, you see.
I
see. Different farms.
I see. Yeah. Well, that sounds very interesting. And do you work along the other workers? Or
yeah, we work.
Even though you are the foreman,
yeah,
or
yeah.
you still work.
I don't really.
With
them. Yeah, when I'm overseeing a group of laborers, I do very little work. I just watch and put down the time of each laborer, you know, and all that, and keep track. And
do you pay them by hours or by they have to work 8 hours a day. Is it 8 hours they work or more than in the farm?
In the farm, sometimes 8 hours, sometimes 10 hours if it's necessary, you know.
Uh-huh.
If you see a inclement weather, we're gonna rain on the crop, we may work a little later in the evening, but it's a day's work. It's usually about 8 hours for a normal laborer.
Yeah. Would they resent or complain about working long hours, or do you give them extra?
In the old days, they don't complain about
the
long hours, because they know it's hard work. And with us, we don't have a certain hours,
mm-hmm.
a number of hours we work.
Mm-hmm.
We work because it's necessary, because we get up so early in the morning and do the work, and work late at night. Sometimes it's so late that you go around with a kerosene lantern to see where you're going and what you're doing, you see,
mm-hmm.
into the barn and bed down the horses
mm-hmm.
and things of that sort, or clean up the stables.
I see.
So it's way down in the middle and dark
uh-huh.
hours of the night uh-huh. before we come home.
Right. In the regular seasons, how many people do you have working for you, not in the harvest or busy season?
Oh, the regular. In the idle, you mean the idle season?
Uh-huh.
We hardly use very many people, you know, 3 or 4 people.
And that's all? To take care of 1,200?
While the crop is being grown.
Uh-huh.
And when we get to a point where it needs to be weeded and
yeah.
things of that sort, and you cultivate it, so we hire more help
uh-huh.
to. It depends on what part of the season or what is required.
Yeah, what do these people do when they are not working in the farm? Because they only got called to work
mm-hmm.
in certain time of the year.
If we have work to do, you know, painting the equipment or something like that, in the low part of the season, we'll make them do that, or go and look over the fence,
mm-hmm.
go around the fence line and see new fence posts had to be put up, or restring the wires and things like that. There's so much other things to do on the farm.
Do these people come back to the city to do some work in other area, and then when the
mm-hmm.
farm needs them, and
they come back to the city, whether they're just sitting around doing nothing, waiting for something to happen? That's possible.
Uh-huh. I see. So they did that.
But it's just the labors that we, just common labors,
uh-huh.
we would say. It's common labors. We just
uh-huh.
go downtown and see who wants to work, and then we put them on the farm.
I see. Well, yesterday we talked about that you left the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Did your father have any objection to it?
You know, that's one thing that my father leave all the decisions up to myself.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to come in the farm, it's perfectly all right with him. He just let me do. I don't know, maybe because I'm the number one son, they let me do what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
I imagine sometimes he feel like scolding me for some of the things that I do, but he never raised a voice, you know. He treated me quite nicely.
That's good. And he treated other sons the same, or your sister and brothers?
Mm-hmm.
Did he force them to go to school, force them to do this and that?
Well, most likely, all of them been scolded quite a bit for
uh-huh.
things that they shouldn't be doing. You know, how kids are. They some of them are pretty radical. You know, they do the things that shouldn't be done, and may cause a lot of.
You mean radical in what ways? Like they would.
I don't mean to go out and try to do harm to other people, but I mean do things wrong, you know, that they shouldn't be doing, you know, like the kids would.
Did he actually set up, you know, like this son has to go to engineering and that son has to go to other business area?
He
never done that?
No, he never.
He just let these all these children
each one
make
chose their
choice.
Own vocations.
Oh, that's good, yeah. So you work in the Andrews Hotel for 8 months and then you got the job in the theater and went through that. Was that the only job since you started working in the theater? Or you have other jobs pick up?
When I left the farm and work at the hotel, that was my first paying job.
Right.
When I would work for my dad, of course, I wasn't getting anything. And although he was very well-to-do at that time, I was too proud to even ask him for a nickel. I've never asked him for any money in my life. Up to today, I said, I can say that I've never asked him for any money. And what I earned is I went out and worked and earned my own money.
Right. So you work very hard. You actually sometimes work two jobs, at the same time. You were designing the poster. You designed the display for the department stores. What else did you do besides this?
Well,
you opened the restaurant.
When I went to work for the hotel and finally got to be a second cook, and then then I disliked that job so well because the hours are practically the same as I was doing at the on the farm. And I said, gee, this is not an improvement.
Right.
I gotta do something a little easier than this for my livelihood, because I was always thinking about when I get old, I have to do something that I can do when I get old, and not to do some heavy work periodically, and then have to quit when I'm a younger age. So I left the
hotel.
After 8 months, in spite of the fact that I was doing pretty good doing the second cook before I, and I suppose I'll be a first cook.
Right.
But I left it to look for something much easier.
Right. So on the side, you opened a restaurant?
No, that was later. I 1913 is when I was at the hotel, and after a few months, I went into theater work. I was a janitor at the kind of an opera house in San Luis Obispo, and as a janitor, and I worked there for a few months until the opportunity came when I can be a projectionist, which is my ultimate
goal
to be a projectionist. Of course, you can't jump right into the projection work, and you gotta work from the bottom, so I start to do janitor work until the proper time came.
Right. What were the other sidelines you got into?
Oh, the sidelines?
Okay.
I get my finger in as many things as I can possibly handle. So one of them is going into a soda fountain, a candy and soda fountain business. And so there was a little source base right next to the theater where I work, the Elmo Theater. You know, I think I mentioned about the Opera House,
right
next to it. So I opened that as a Gold Dragon restaurant.
Oh.
And we don't mention restaurant. We just say the Gold Dragon, and that's the soda fountain and candy store. Combined with some food, Chinese food and American food, and so we call it the Gold Dragon. And then we sold candy, and particularly the soft drink, the soda fountain department that attracted a lot of young people, you know, school kids, and after
movie
the show,
goers,
after the show, that thing, the Gold Dragon was just packed.
That was around what year?
1923. And in 1928, it was, we were so successful. The Gold Dragon was so successful, we moved up to another theater, which the company acquired, called the Obispo Theater. Next to the Obispo Theater, we opened up the new Gold Dragon. And there's where we broadened out our venture, and we had more or less of an elaborate Chinese motif design of the booth, and the entire interior was real oriental effect with hand-painted silk lanterns and for table lamps, and special music that comes from nowhere and mysteriously produced, you know, unless instead of an old jukebox that you see sitting, instead of a jukebox, we hid the jukebox underneath the staircase. Nobody could see the jukebox. But if you drop a nickel into a small slot on your table, the music comes out mysteriously. So, you know, I always
Quaintly designed.
And the candy section was quite unique. See, bragging again, see?
Sure.
I cut out a tree. The tree espaliered against the wall, and on it edge, in the tip of each branch, as a round ball full of candy, different kinds of candy. So every branch comes out from the street with different kind of candy. So
and you have the restaurant as a regular restaurant.
Serving
Chinese food.
Chinese food and
American
both kind and American food. You know, light things and not too heavy. You can get a six course dinner. You know.
But for how much at that time?
Oh, about 65 cents.
For six-course dinner?
Yeah, six-course dinner, and or you can get a light lunch for about 35 cents.
I see. And who actually managed the restaurant? Because you were working in
the
theater. As Stella, did Stella help?
Stella. With my partner and her brother, Roy, he was a manager. In fact, he was a buyer. He had to buy food. He had to go out and pick up groceries and what have you.
So it became like family business also.
So he did quite well as a manager, and we kept him as a manager and.
So That was the second sideline. I mean, you really have a business. And that opened till when? The restaurant opened.
Well, the Gold Dragon, the new Gold Dragon lasted from 1928 to 64.
Oh, that's quite long,
And then we turned it over to my brother-in-law, Stella's brother, who operated for a while, and then he sold out.
I see.
He got tired of it.
It's hard work, though.
We were growing quite rapidly, and then we rented an additional floor space, and we cut a hole in the wall and made a dragon room out of that additional space. We cut a hole in the wall round.
Moon gate,
with a gate on it. You can close it up for meeting, you know. And in that room is modern Chinese, you know, with a dragon running along the wall and great big dragon head watching over.